Podcast. Black or gold bits. Podcast. Black Heart Gold Podcast, episode 41, XLI. Adam Jacoby, Patrick Vint. Last week we actually did record a 41, it just never actually made it to the air because Jacoby was hosting it, and frankly I couldn't let him have that kind of power.
You know what, I think that we need to like release it as like a lost episode sometime in June or something like that. I dare say it was 10 times better than anything you've ever hosted in the Black Heart Gold podcast, and I think our fans would have agreed, and I think you're a little scared of my hosting skills.
Whatever, Mr. CBS. You can't even, like, swear anymore. You're so afraid of your CBS overlords.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah?
Let's hear it.
Damn.
Whoa.
Damn is a swear
word.
Shoop, bay doop.
Well, this is definitely staying in.
Salt and pepper. Yeah, it's, I think salt and pepper, qualifies as a swear word.
Absolutely. All right, so anyway.
Anything.
Now that Adam's done swearing for the week, well,
balls.
Thank you. We're joined tonight for Michigan State Week by LVS from The Only Colors, the SBN Michigan State blog. I could have said LVS from TOC, the SBN MSU blog. And then if I put an OMG and a BBQ in there, we could have gotten some serious three-letter acronym action. But LVS, how you doing tonight?
Not bad, guys. How about you?
We're alive, just barely. And
kicking.
And Michigan State could put us out of our misery this week. Spartans are the only undefeated team left in the conference. They're BCS number 5. They are incredibly balanced. They've had a little bit of trouble running the ball the last couple of weeks, but they've got big wins over the likes of Wisconsin and, Wisconsin.
One for one, though.
Hey, it's more than we can say. So let's just get right out of the way. More importantly, how do you feel about this team so far? Is this a legitimate national championship contender, or is this the sort of lucky break, smoke and mirror BS that Iowa pulled last year?
I mean, it's tough to say. Like, whether it's a national championship contender is just is kind of fluid this season because it really would just all depend on who we would face in the national championship game. Like, if we went up against Boise, who obviously had a tough time with Virginia Tech, I don't know if we would necessarily win that game, but we could hang with them. But, you know, if we went up against Auburn or, like, ended up going up against, like, a one-loss Alabama team somehow, I think that we'd probably get. It probably wouldn't be all that pretty, but you know, nonetheless, this is a very good team. Like you say, it's very balanced. They're not invincible by any means, as you saw against Northwestern last week. Although in the whole scheme of things, the Northwestern win actually makes me feel a little bit better about the team because that was the first time that they faced real adversity the entire season, the first time that they had a huge deficit and they passed that test with flying colors, just came out in the second half and, you know, didn't run away with the game, but just kept chipping away and doing good things on every offensive drive. And so, yeah, I mean, this team's for real. I don't necessarily think that they're national championship caliber, but Big Ten championship, absolutely.
Where did they struggle the most against Northwestern in the first half?
The biggest problem was on the offensive line, in both the passing game and the running game. We had very good running backs, but in the first half against Northwestern, they couldn't get anything going quick simply because all the holes were closed up. And, you know, Northwestern doesn't have a world-beating defensive line by any means, so that was disappointing. And Cousins was under pressure quite frequently. You know, it was also a problem with his throws because the weather was pretty nasty in the first half of the game. They came out in the second half, and for whatever reason, well, actually, not for whatever reason, Cousins started throwing the ball a lot more quickly, you know, taking fewer, you know, four-step, five-step drops, getting the ball off more quickly, so that there was less time for them to develop a pass rush. And then once he was able to connect on those things and they had to respect the passing game more, then the running game opened up a little bit. It still wasn't a great performance by the offensive line, and, you know, that's certainly something to watch given how strong Iowa is on the defensive line.
Michigan State's sort of the opposite of Wisconsin in that they, you know, like you said, are pretty good at passing to open up the run rather than vice versa, which is how Wisconsin does it. But I think that's because, just like you mentioned, their offensive line isn't good enough to just line up against eight in the box and grind out 5 yards a carry here, you know, 5, 5, 5, 3, 7, you know, the way that Wisconsin does drive. Now, that's not to say Michigan State's got a bad running game or anything like that. It's just, it's not really their bread and butter. And the way they have succeeded on the, in the rushing game has been, springing big plays. And I think they do that really well,
yeah.
And I think that we might see one of those at Kinnick this year.
Well, and that, the thing about that is once a hole does show up, our running backs, Edwin Baker in particular, has breakaway capabilities. I mean, he can get away from the pack and run off. He has several, you know, 60-yard touchdowns this season. He definitely has the big play capability. I think you're generally right. I would never say that our offensive line is as good as Wisconsin's, for instance. But, you know, what I will say is that we've had success running. I mean, for instance, in the Wisconsin game, we had a lot of success running the ball in that game, and it wasn't just the bigger plays. We were able to get 5, 6-yard games at the time. I think that the offensive line was playing a little bit better at that point in the season. There have been, you know, we haven't had a bye week yet. It's probably fair to say that the offensive line is a little bit bumped and bruised and probably not playing as strong as they were a few weeks ago. They're still capable. And the thing about it is that if MSU can establish a passing team, Kirk Cousins is one of the best play, one of the best play action quarterbacks you'll ever see. And so
yeah.
If MSU can get the run going and Iowa has to respect the run quite a bit, Cousins will just burn you. So if Iowa can shut the ground game down, obviously they'll be able to do some, you know, that won't be as big of a threat. So,
well, the story all year so far has been, I mean, I think everybody kind of knew what you had with Cousins as far as you said, an excellent play-action quarterback, good kind of, very much like Rick Stanzi. I mean, you know, good on the rollout, good in the pocket. Mm-hmm. You know, not exactly the kind of conservative game manager that you see at schools like Wisconsin, but, you know, not far from that mold and incredibly successful in what he does. But the story all season had been that Le'Veon Bell and, as you mentioned before, Edwin Baker have been so successful as underclassmen in the running game. Illinois really stopped the Michigan State running attack, though, and it wasn't necessarily a huge factor last week against Northwestern, too. What was the secret to their success?
Illinois, I mean, I think we had like 4 yards rushing at halftime in that game. It was absolutely brutal. And the thing about that is that Illinois has a good defensive line, for sure. Northwestern, less so. I mean, in the game last week, I think more than anything else, the team came out just a little bit flat. Northwestern was flying out of the gates, and MSU didn't match that intensity, for lack of a better term, in the first half. You know, offensive line play, I'm certainly not an expert at it. So in terms of what the technical problems have been, I'm not entirely sure. A lot of the problems have come from the left side of the line. You know, like, it kind of comes and it goes. The way that the year started, it was more that we were running to set up the pass, and now the past couple of games, it's been the opposite. It's been passing to set up the run. And quite frankly, against this Iowa defense, which is very stout up front, obviously, but probably has some vulnerabilities in at linebacker in the secondary, I would expect that it's going to be the same. and particularly because this game is gigantic for MSU, obviously. They're going to be going as deep into the playbook as they possibly can to probably be very aggressive play calling. I think MSU is going to throw the ball a lot, particularly in the first half.
Yep. I actually think that that's a bit of an understatement to say that it's a big win or a big game for Michigan State. I know it's foolish to assume wins in the Big Ten. I mean, even Ohio State has proven that the last couple of years. But once they've got a win over Wisconsin and a win over Iowa and they don't have to play Ohio State at all, that's a pretty smooth road to getting to at least Pasadena for the Spartans. You know, again, they actually, you know, they do have to actually play the games, but
right.
It couldn't be set up any better for that. And if they were to lose the Big Ten, I think it would be a gigantic upset and disappointment for East Lansing. I think that if they beat Iowa, you have to expect that Michigan State is going at worst 7-1 in the Big Ten and probably going to Pasadena.
Yeah, and I mean, I can. There's a million scenarios where even if MSU won at Iowa, they could lose one more game, but still that would result in a share of the Big Ten. For them to not get at least a share of the championship would require just a collapse, because you know, after the Iowa game, we have Minnesota coming to East Lansing, and then a bye week, and then Purdue coming to East Lansing, and you know, like you said, you can't assume wins in the conference, but I can't see MSU
but those
dropping
teams
either
are,
of those games.
Yeah, they're pretty barf-tastic.
They're not good football teams. And then, you know, to finish the season, we have to go to State College to take on Penn State, and that's a game that scares me to death, particularly if the team is undefeated at that point, because MSU hasn't won at Penn State since the 1960s, but between the strength of MSU and the weakness of Penn State this year, if there's a year that we're ever going to pick up a win there, it's going to be this season. So, yeah, it's a gigantic game for Michigan State. It's the biggest MSU game in at least 20 years, probably more than that. So, you know, people talked about the danger of MSU looking past Northwestern last week. Under all the circumstances, it's kind of understandable because this is just a colossal, colossal game for MSU.
The story all season, of course, other than the fact that Michigan State's 8-0 for the first time in, like, recorded history, is Mark D'Antonio, who had an actual heart attack after the Notre Dame game and missed some time and was coaching from the booth for a while. LVS, a quick update on his status and how was this team so successful in basically keeping everything going, all systems go, with their head coach missing for 2-3 weeks?
So in terms of D'Antonio, last week was the first game that he was on the sidelines for the entire game since the Notre Dame game. You know, obviously, I'm sure that he is visiting the doctor several times a week to make sure that everything's all right, but my impression, and based on everything that I know, is that he's more or less back up to full speed at this point. He's probably going to take some time off after the season is over to get himself together a little bit. But again, you know, the potential to be a very special season for Michigan State, and I'm sure he's doing everything he can to be a part of it. In terms of the team staying together, I think that you have to give all the credit in the world to Don Treadwell, who's the offensive coordinator and was kind of the de facto head coach when D'Antonio was sidelined for the weeks after the heart attack. The team didn't miss a beat under Treadwell, beat Wisconsin at home, beat Michigan in Ann Arbor when D'Antonio was up in the press box and, you know, it wasn't real clear how much input he had in the actual game call. And Treadwell is almost certainly going to be a head coach somewhere after this season is over, and whoever hires him is going to be getting a good one.
Well, I got to say that there's always been discussion of the fact that D'Antonio and Ferentz are always so similar in a lot of ways, you know, personality-wise more than anything else. But Ferentz this week in his press conference talked about how the continuity of that staff, even coming over from Cincinnati, has been so instrumental in how good Michigan State's been and how, you know, basically they all came to East Lansing together. Man, I almost made a huge mistake there. I apologize in advance to all of our Michigan State listeners for almost saying Ann Arbor. But that the fact that staff came in essentially with everything in place and just, you know, hit the ground running from there has really helped them out. The joke I was making last week. Go ahead.
Adam. I was just going to say that's very Iowa-esque, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not necessarily. Yeah. Coming over together, I don't think Norm Parker was ever a Ferentz assistant before, but the fact that he's kept the biggest chess pieces in place this entire time, I think is certainly by design and no accident, and a reason that Iowa's doing a lot better this year. And I think it's absolutely true that Treadwell's familiarity with D'Antonio and their long history together played a gigantic role in how well he was able to take over for D'Antonio when he needed to.
Absolutely, and that was something that all the parties involved said while the entire situation was going on, just the familiarity between all the coaches. I mean, they had been working together now. The coordinators had been working together for almost a decade on D'Antonio's staff, both at Cincinnati and now at Michigan State. You know, D'Antonio was gone, but not a whole lot changed. That's what the impression that I had. And that's always been something that both the athletic director and D'Antonio himself, they've always talked about in the press conferences, how much they value that continuity. One of our assistant coaches and the primary recruiter from the past few seasons actually left. He's the head coach at Central Michigan now, Danny Enos. But aside from that, the coaching staff has been almost unchanged. And, you know, from time to time, people have called for the defensive coordinator set, particularly when things got really, really bad with our past defense last season, when things were honestly atrocious. But you can tell that D'Antonio and the athletic director and just the entire staff values that continuity quite a bit. And it's going to take a lot to break them up. But I do think that Treadwell is going to get a good enough head coaching offer this off season, where this is probably going to be the last hurrah.
Now, defensively for Michigan State, the story going into the year, of course, was the trio of linebackers, and you know, particularly Greg Jones, who came in at least as a front runner for Big Ten Player of the Year, and still is, you know, near the top of those lists, as well as former Indiana point guard Eric Gordon.
Eric Gordon.
Different Eric Gordon. But the defensive line has been pretty solid, even though they're playing two relatively unknown quantities in Hoover and Worthy.
Worthy was on the all-freshman Big Ten team last year, and this season he's definitely playing at an all-Big Ten level. I don't think that he's necessarily going to get first-team all-Big Ten just because of the other really good defensive tackles in the conference, but he's fantastic. Tyler Hoover, the past two games, has been incredible, and that he was co-defensive player of the week last week, and the week before, when Brett Jones was named the defensive player of the week for a game against Illinois, I thought that Hoover was our best defensive player in that game. All of a sudden, I don't know what, you know, switch flipped in his head or anything, but he's getting into the backfield over and over and over again. He sacked person a number of times last week, just a menace in the backfield. The one thing that's going to be a big improvement for MSU for this game is that both of our nose tackles were injured, Kevin Pickleman and Blake Treadwell. They were both injured basically at the same time, so MSU was running a real, you know, just a not a very good situation at that position. Both of those guys are back. Both of them are very good run stoppers, and that should make a big difference. I think that we miss them a lot against Northwestern.
So what do you think for Michigan State's ability to stop the run? Do you think they're going to have a good enough time against Robinson? Let me establish a watermark or benchmark. Watermark.
Give me like an over-under.
Exactly. 100 yards for Adam Robinson. Are you taking the over or under on that one?
take the under. MSU has done a very good job this year against all the big running backs that it's faced. The only guy who's had really a lot of success against us was James White for Wisconsin, and he did that on limited carries. And he's not the kind of running back that Adam Robinson is. I mean, White is just so speedy. And I have all the respect in the world for Robinson, honestly, particularly given the way that he settled into the position for Iowa and how he's had to take over everything almost on no notice. But, you know, MSU stopped. We were the first team in forever to hold John Clay under 100 yards. Michael LeSure for Illinois didn't do a whole lot against us. Last week against Northwestern, we had some problems, but they run a much different running game than Iowa is going to show. You know, going back to the beginning of the season, then obviously against Michigan, we were the first team really to contain Denard Robinson. Again, that's not the same kind of running game that you're going to see against Iowa, obviously. But this team does a good job against the run. I don't think that Robinson is going to, like, totally whiff. I mean, when I say that he goes under 100 yards, I think they'll probably be, like, 85 or 90. But I'll take the under on that. Yeah. I'm more concerned about Stansy coming up with some big plays in the passing game.
Go ahead, Adam.
I was just asking how Michigan State's cornerbacks have looked so far this year. I think that's going to be a huge matchup, especially with DJK performing at clearly the highest level of his career at this stage.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been incredible, and ever since the Michigan game, I've kind of been having nightmares about what he can do. The MSU, I'm sure you guys know, the MSU pass defense was an absolute disaster last season. This year, it's quite a bit better. It's not that they're just locking everybody down and nobody's getting yards. It's that they've really done a good job of limiting the big plays and then coming up with turnovers. We had one interception against Northwestern last week. I think that gives MSU 13 interceptions on the season. It might be higher than that. The secondary, after just completely whiffing on getting big plays last season, doing nothing on that, has been incredible at that this year, and that's been a major part of the success for the secondary at MSU. There's the two safeties, Marcus Hyde and Trenton Robinson. I think both are improved significantly. Both of them played last year. This year, they're both playing at a much higher level. Johnny Adams is one corner, and he's a sophomore, and by the time that he leaves MSU, I think that he's going to be the best cornerback in MSU in a long time by the time that he graduates. He's very talented. He doesn't necessarily have, I mean, he's definitely going to lose some in the size matchup to DJK, but he can stay with him. He's done a decent job against some good receivers this year. The only team that really was able to burn MSU was Notre Dame, and Michael Floyd's excellent. So, you know, I fear a recurrence of what happened in that game, but since that game, there hasn't been a whole lot to worry about. On the other side, it's actually an interesting situation because MSU, the other cornerback is Chris Allrucker, who has been out the last two games because he had a DUI.
Yeah.
Okay. So Rucker may or may not play. We'll see what happens with that. If he doesn't play, it's going to be Darquise Denard, who's the second cornerback. He's a true freshman. He's done a pretty nice job filling in these two games when Rucker's been out. You know, they're not a collection of superstars, but if you look at how they performed against good teams this year, you know, Scott Tolzien probably had the worst game of his college career against MSU. Dan Persa did a lot last week on the ground, but he really didn't get a whole lot done through the air. They're not the greatest secondary that you'll ever see, but they get the job done, and they certainly have had a knack for making big plays this season. So, and they'll obviously be looking to do the same against Iowa, I'm sure.
I think it's worth pointing out that Michigan State is in the top five of the amount of passes that have been attempted against them, and they're still 18th in the nation in pass efficiency defense. And just to point out, Iowa's 26th. So Michigan State is certainly no slouch, and the fact that they only give up 6 yards per attempt, which is about 4 yards under Stansi's average so far this year, is more than a little worrisome from where or from Iowa's standpoint. So I think that something's got to give, so to speak, in that matchup. And I'm not really sure which side's going to give first.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, DJK is obviously a good enough receiver to get some things done, but MSU has been pretty stout, so obviously I hope for more than that on Saturday.
Now, a game that looks to be, I mean, you look up and down the line, I mean, even down to silent play, these two teams are so evenly matched, but the one glaring mismatch here is on special teams, where Michigan State has won games on fakes twice now, essentially. I mean, definitely the Notre Dame overtime and the kickstart that came with the fake against Northwestern. And Iowa's special teams look like just an absolute train wreck.
They've played direct roles in both of Iowa's losses.
Right. Ironically, yeah. Yes, it's coincidental. You think there's another trick up D'Antonio's sleeve here?
Well, it's worth pointing out that our punter right now has a 475 quarterback rating. So they might be kind of reluctant to try another thing just because it'll, you know, if there's an incomplete pass, it's going to completely ruin his stats. So, I mean, if you're just talking about the video game mentality. But
give the man the Heisman.
Exactly. Well, you know, after MSU pulled off the hook and ladder near the end of the Iowa game last year, I'm sure that kind of the, you know, ballsy play calls, it's not really a surprise to Iowa fans. D'Antonio is definitely not a, you know, people have the impression of him as being this very stodgy kind of guy, but he's definitely not afraid to go into the bag of tricks. And given what we talked about earlier, how this is just a gigantic game for Michigan State, I can't imagine that he's not going to throw every card on the table that he has. So, in terms of the special teams, how they play this week, in terms of the return game, is going to depend a lot on whether Tyshawn Martin is healthy. He had an Achilles injury. It's not completely clear whether he's going to play on Saturday, and if he plays, how much of a role he's going to be able to have. If he plays, he's, you know, in the least of the past, he's an excellent kick returner. He had a punt return for a touchdown against Wisconsin, which really changed the momentum of that game. And he's obviously also very, very productive in the passing game, does a lot of end-arounds in the offensive sets as well. Our punter, Aaron Bates, is very, very good and throws the most beautiful wounded duck passes you've ever seen in your entire life. Our punter, Dan Conroy, was perfect until he finally missed his first attempt last week against Northwestern. I'm very, very confident in him. The special teams have been good for MSU, not like out of this world amazing, but very, very solid. I have a lot of confidence in them.
And I guess all we have left to talk about that is predictions. LVS, what do you think is going to happen on Saturday?
It's such a tough game to predict because with this one, it seems to me like it's going to be so much about things that we really don't know about yet. Like, the mental state of Michigan State just essentially being close to a one-game season for them left at this point. For Iowa, coming off of a really, really difficult loss last week, you never know exactly how the team is going to react after that one. I kind of like MSU in this game. I think that they're a very balanced team. I don't think that they're going to put up a ton of points, but I think that in the last two games for Iowa, it's at least been proven that you can score points on that defense. I'm more worried about the Iowa offense. Like I said, I have nightmares of DJK breaking off some big plays, which may or may not be justified because nobody's really done that against MSU this year, but I think that he's
the best wide receiver that we're going to face the rest of the season. So that's always a possibility. It's a huge game for MSU. Like I said, I really think that the coaches are going to pull out all the stops to win this game. I think it's going to be enormously it's going to be very exciting and entertaining, and I don't think that either team is going to run away with it. Like you said, it's very evenly matched. But in the end, I'm going to take MSU to keep it rolling, 34-28 or 34-31, something like that. I think that there are going to be some points on the board in this game.
You're not going to go ahead and say Michigan State 15, Iowa 13 on a last-second slant route from Cousins to Dell?
Well,
are you referencing something there? I don't really have any recollection.
Pulling that out of my ass completely.
Jacoby, actually, technically it would be Cousins to Nichols because it would be quarterback to converted quarterback.
Former quarterback, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah. Adam, what do you think for this week?
Yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about.
I totally understand, and I believe that all that therapy money was well spent. Anyway, my prediction.
I think that it's going to be a really entertaining game, I have to say. I think that there's going to be a lot more offense in this game than people think. It's going to be really close, but, MSU has got the positive juju somehow or another that we've never, ever had in my entire lifetime, and this team has passed every test they've faced so far this season. I'm not about to start betting against them now.
That's a good point. That is a good point, and Iowa has, faced two tests that they couldn't pass, I guess you would say. But all the same, I'm still picking Iowa on this one. I disagree. I'm not so certain that there's going to be a lot of points scored. I'm saying Iowa 20, Michigan State 17. So, betting degenerates, that means I think, Michigan State is going to cover. I like Iowa's ability to pass.
Really? Is it like an 8-point?
It's 6.
I saw 6 and a half, but something like that. Anyway,
you said that Iowa's going to cover.
No, I misspoke. Michigan State's definitely going to cover. you heard it from me, so it must be true. I think 20 to 17. I think Michigan State's going to struggle to get their blockers to the second level and really antagonize Iowa's weakness, which is linebacker this season, clearly. I think Iowa's defensive line is going to cause enough trouble and be disruptive enough in the running game that Cousins is going to have to win this one with his arm. And granted, if you're going to have a quarterback try to win with his arm, Cousins is a pretty decent place to start. But I don't think he's going to be able to do enough compared to how Iowa's offense is going to attack the Michigan State defense. I think turnovers might play a role too. Special teams might play a role, and I think the fact that we're in Kinnick Stadium for this game is probably going to push those factors ever so slightly in Iowa's way, and I think that'll be enough for the Hawkeyes to get a really close victory for once.
Well, I'm much closer to LVS's prediction than I am to Adam's, although I'm usually wrong on these, as we all know. I think Michigan State wins this game. I the more I look at it, the more I think that these are two very evenly matched teams. I think Michigan State's defense is actually probably a little better than Iowa's. I think Iowa's offense might be slightly better than Michigan State's, but not in any real significant way. And with teams that evenly matched, much like Iowa and Wisconsin were last week, it comes down to those little things on special teams and who's able to protect the ball better. And at this point, I have no faith in Iowa to do either one of those things particularly well. And I even agree there's going to be a few points on the board. I think a 31-28 Michigan State's a pretty safe prediction of the spot. And I don't understand the point spread at all. I do not get that 6-point spread in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I think that Vegas sees something that we don't. Usually when there's these just they aberrant point spreads. Usually when we see those, and everybody starts, you know, betting one way and Vegas doesn't really move them, then there's usually a good reason for that point spread. As an example, Missouri and Oklahoma. Everyone in the world, myself included, hand raised high, thought that Oklahoma only giving, 3 points at Missouri was laughable.
Yeah.
And I personally thought it was going to be like a 10 to 17 point win for Oklahoma. But Vegas said 3, everyone jumped on Oklahoma, and Missouri ended up just kicking the snot out of this Sooners. So
I think there's one person here who thought that might happen. That's right, Missouri that lover, some? Right here.
Oh God!
Boom, right there. No, actually, I did not put my money where my mouth was on that one, though. I will say that I did not bet either side on that game. I stayed away.
Yeah, I.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned the spread, just because MSU had like Edwin Baker's garbage time touchdown, which actually was kind of a bad thing at the end of the Northwestern game last year, was one of the great moments in gambling history because he shouldn't have run into the end zone, but when he did, it covered the point spread for MSU.
Fall down at the 1 yard line?
Because he had 500 on the game, Jacoby, that's why.
Yeah, exactly.
That was rent. Make rent.
If he's betting for MSU, then it's no matter. But anyway, he should have fallen down, because then we can just kneel on the ball. Instead, it gave me like an extended my heart attack for another minute and a half before Gordon put it away. But in terms of the Vegas lines, like I think Vegas takes into account a whole lot of the more advanced computer rankings, like not the simple, stupid stuff that the BCS looks at that takes away, you know, margin of victory and all those factors that they think are, you know, that for policy reasons they decide to exclude. Like, for instance, if you look at Jeff Zagarin's ratings, MSU, I think, is ranked number 2 in his rating that is actually part of the BCS ranking, but if you look at his predictor rating, MSU is number 20. And that's a result of playing a lot of close games. But, I think that MSU is better than the 20th team in the country, but Vegas has a lot of faith in that stuff. But, you know, MSU has done a very good job this season of covering spreads, so we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm looking forward to it.
It's going to be a hell of a game. I really am looking forward to this one. I'll even try to keep myself relatively sober for it. Relatively. It's all relative. Yeah. All right, we want to thank LVS for being with us and remind our readers they can catch all the Michigan State action, especially during basketball season when their real sport begins. But oddly enough, now it's their football school. Their football program is successful enough that Steve Alford will no longer coach for them. They have all the coverage of Michigan State's football season and basketball over at the Only Colors. Thanks again, bud.
That's been fun.